Chapter 8, The Power of the Little Things. Sometimes the smallest things take up the most room in your heart. Winnie the Pooh. Think about the last time you met someone new. Perhaps you were at a dinner party and... Wait, hold on. Do people still go to dinner parties? I know people meet friends for dinner, but when is the last time any of us went to a dinner party? I'm not sure I've ever gone to a dinner party. Anyway, you're meeting someone new and the conversation shifts to what you do for a living. When telling someone you're a teacher, the person is likely to respond in one of two ways. The first is a chuckled reply along the lines of, "Oh, wow, must be nice to have 3 months off in the summer." Ever had someone say something like this to you? If so, were you tempted to deliver a 5-minute, "You don't know what you're talking about," lecture? If you did, I wouldn't blame you. Fortunately, nowadays when someone learns that you are a teacher, the more common response is educated and sympathetic. "Oh my goodness, I could never do what you do. You don't get paid enough. That has got to be such a hard job." When I meet new people and tell them I'm in education, a response like this is what I typically hear. Most people understand that teaching is a difficult job. I recently saw a quote on Facebook that made me laugh. It read, "Teaching is easy. It's like riding a bike. Except the bike is on fire. You're on fire. Everything is on fire." Yep, some days definitely feel like that. Being a teacher is hard. Being an administrator is hard. There are so many aspects to what we do, and it seems every year more and more things get added to our plates, and challenges we never or rarely faced just a few years ago are now commonplace. It's so easy to get bogged down with all of the responsibilities involved in doing our job well. Familiarizing ourselves with updated standards, learning new curriculum, differentiating instruction, keeping standards-based grades, attending IEPs and SSTs, handling discipline problems. Should I go on? I could, but I think you get the picture. We are responsible for a ton. While all those things are important, really important, the purpose of this chapter is to remind you that a large part of your edu influence lies in actions that are often overlooked. It's the little things that often have the biggest impact on the lives of the students and adults we serve. Wait, Brent, you're saying there are things just as important, if not more important, than knowing the standards and differentiating instruction? Yep, that's exactly what I'm saying. In preparation for writing this chapter, I reached out to my professional learning network, my PLN, on social media and asked them this question. When you think of your favorite teacher in school growing up, what do you remember most? I received several responses, but you know what no one mentioned? Learning how to do long division. Nobody talked about how their teacher individualized instruction either. In fact, nearly every reply from my PLN had nothing to do with curriculum or instruction. What they remembered were the little things. Here are a few of their memories. Kindness. She was always happy and loved all her students, even the naughty ones. I don't remember her ever raising her voice. She cared. She came to my house for dinner. She smiled at me. Wow. She smiled at me. More than 20 years later, a smile was the memory that stood out most. Not pedagogy, not content knowledge, a smile. Reading these responses from fellow educators made me wonder, what memories do my former students have of being in my class. Fortunately, I'm Facebook friends with a handful of my former fourth and fifth graders, now college graduates. As if I needed another reminder of my advancing age. So I decided to reach out and ask them what they remembered. I asked them to honestly share what memories stand out from being in my class. I told them I wasn't fishing for compliments. If all they remembered was that I always wore blue shirts, that's what I wanted to know. I predicted their memories would be much like those of my PLN, that they wouldn't include specific lessons, but rather be about things considered to be non-academic. You know, the little things. Here's what they said. I remember you smiled a lot and kept the classroom atmosphere enjoyable and positive. You had excellent penmanship when you wrote on the whiteboard. I remember coming into your classroom after lunch, and our desks were arranged in groups of four facing each other. I liked that setup rather than everyone facing one direction because it felt less like a classroom. I remember you used to always give us riddles, and if and when we got the answers as a class, you would attach paper clips coming down from the top to the bottom of the whiteboard. If and when we hit the bottom, you'd bless us with a pizza party. You had a fun spirit and rewarded us by playing games like Heads Up 7-Up. My fondest and strongest memories are when you read Harry Potter and By the Great Horn Spoon aloud. It was something I looked forward to. I think those experiences really started my love for reading that's continued to this day. I was right. Not a single one of their memories referenced a particular lesson. It was the little things that stood out in their minds. What about you? What do you remember about your favorite teachers growing up? More importantly, what are your students going to remember about you? You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. When I think back to my most memorable teachers, the one that immediately comes to mind is my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Olson. Memories of being in her class give me warm fuzzies. I vividly remember what the classroom looked like and where I sat. But what I remember most is one of the little things. After lunch each day, Mrs. Olson had all of us students come to the front of the room and sit on the carpet where she would read aloud to us. I don't remember any of the books she read, but what I do remember is how we sat. As students, we would always arrange ourselves in lines, cross-legged, one student in front of the other. These lines branched out from where Mrs. Olson sat, like spokes on a wheel. And while she read to us, we would scratch each other's backs. We got to scratch each other's backs in school. Of course, students always wanted to be in the front of a line because then you'd get your back scratched without having to scratch someone else's. One of the worst things that could befall a fourth grader in Mrs. Olson's class was to end up on the carpet in the back of a line. Kids in her class were never late to line up after lunch. Being late to line up meant you'd more than likely end up in the back of a line on the carpet, meaning your back wasn't getting scratched that day. To us 9-year-olds, there were few things worse than a day without a scratched back. You know what I don't remember about Mrs. Olson's class? Any of the curriculum she taught us. Seriously, I can't remember any math lessons. Not one, though they had to have been present each and every day. I don't recall learning a single thing about the California missions, though I'm sure there were plenty of lessons on this topic, a cornerstone of California's fourth grade social studies curriculum. I have no doubt that Mrs. Olson was a strong teacher, but what sticks out in my mind nearly 40 years later is how she made me feel, how she made my classmates feel. We loved her, but not because her pedagogy was solid. We loved her because she saw the importance of the little things. She realized something as simple as allowing her students to scratch each other's backs could make her classroom a place that didn't feel like school, a place where students wanted to be. And we did want to be there. Oh, how we did. Thank you, Mrs. Olson, for exercising this important facet of your edu influence, for using things deemed small to create memories that are big. When pizza isn't just pizza. As the lead learner of my school, one of my privileges is the opportunity to host lunch with the principal. Each month, teachers select a student from their class who has been excelling academically, demonstrating perseverance, showing great character, etc. And those students get to join me to dine on gourmet Little Caesar's pizza. Did I say gourmet? I meant inexpensive. Though to young kids, Little Caesar's is gourmet. It's a fun way for me to sit down and chat with students, praise them for working hard, and connect with them in a more relaxed setting. Totally casual. Just students, our assistant principal, and me, shooting the breeze over pizza. This time is always enjoyable, but one particular lunch with the principal this past year really reminded me of the power of the little things. It had been a typical monthly gathering, scheduled during a busy day, and after students had finished their pizza and were dismissed back to class, I walked through the staff lounge where one of our first grade teachers stopped me in my tracks by saying, "Hey Brent, Colin was so excited to have lunch with you today. He even got a haircut yesterday to get ready." "Wait, what?" I said. "He got a haircut for lunch with the principal?" "Yep, that's what he and his mom told me," she said with a smile. Wow, I couldn't believe what I had heard, but apparently getting to eat a $6 pizza with me was a pretty big deal for this six-year-old. Enough so that he wanted to get a haircut beforehand. That's the elementary equivalent of a high school girl getting her hair and nails done before the prom, right? I was totally blown away. I was incredibly humbled. And then I felt a bit ashamed. See, at that moment, I realized that in the busyness of my schedule, I had overlooked the importance of this time with my students and been guilty of viewing it as just one of the many things on my to-do list that day. While perhaps small in the grand scheme of things, this wasn't about pizza. It was an opportunity to connect with my students, a chance to talk about their pets at home, what they like to play at recess, and what they hoped to get for Christmas. It was an opportunity to get to know those I serve and for them to get to know me. I was reminded that students don't necessarily have a dozen things on their calendar that have to get done. I was reminded that for them, I may be the one thing on their to-do list, the one thing they're looking forward to that day. You may be the one thing your students are looking forward to today. Your actions, even the small, simple ones like smiling, may be the highlight of a student's day, the reason he or she gets up in the morning. So if you find yourself thinking, "It's just a smile, it's just a high five, or it's just pizza," remember, that smile, high five, or time spent over pizza may be making a student's day, week, or even month. That student may be telling his or her mom and dad about the experience or writing about it in a journal. Who knows? Your simple action may even lead to a haircut. Deskside manner. Before we move on, I want to clarify that in no way am I downplaying the importance of the big things in education. Make no mistake, things like utilizing sound instructional strategies and providing students with formative feedback are essential to being a successful teacher. You can't be great without them. The purpose of this chapter is not to encourage teachers to ignore such things, but rather remind us there is so much more to teaching, to being an effective leader, than simply knowing your content. Take the example of a doctor's bedside manner. Doctors can have all the degrees in the world, know their particular branch of medicine like the back of their hand, but if they don't have good bedside manner, they probably won't have a lot of patients looking forward to their visits. Bedside manner, when compared to the knowledge and skills required in an area of medicine, could be considered to be secondary, to be a little thing. But is it? Yes, we want our doctors to have the big things down. We want them to know their stuff. But don't we also want them to have the little things, like bedside manner? I'm sure a lot of you are thinking that bedside manner isn't little, that it's totally important. I completely agree, but if we had to choose between a heart surgeon's ability to perform open heart surgery and his bedside manner, we'd probably take a great surgeon who isn't necessarily a people person. That being said, why can't we have both? Don't we as patients deserve both? Applying this example to education, if we are the doctors and our students are the patients, don't they deserve both? My eye doctor totally gets this. This may sound crazy, but I actually look forward to my annual eye exam. As someone who has worn glasses and/or contact lenses since the beginning of fourth grade, I've had a lot of eye examinations in my life. But never had I looked forward to a checkup until I began seeing my current doctor. Why? Because my doctor recognizes the power of the little things. His bedside manner is incredible. He is kind, personable, and he makes me feel like I give the correct answers to all his questions. Questions that don't have right or wrong answers. For those of you who aren't familiar with a visit to the eye doctor, here's how it works. You sit in the chair and look through what's called a phoropter, a weird-looking machine containing a whole bunch of interchangeable lenses. In order to determine your prescription, the doctor goes through a series of questions I call, which looks better? For each eye, the doctor has you look through two different lenses in the phoropter, asking you which lens gives you clearer vision. Depending on your answer, the doctor changes the lenses and again asks you which one makes things clearer. He continues this process until he finds the perfect lens combination for you. Here's how the conversation sounds with my doctor. The doctor would start by saying, "Okay, which do you like better, lens one or two?" "One." "Good. Now if I change it to this, which is better, one or two?" "Two." Good. "How about this, one or two?" "Still two." Good. "Now if I change this here, is it clearer or just a little smaller?" "Smaller." Good. "Okay, great job. That's it. Things look good." My doctor asks me a question. I give him an answer, and he says, "Good job." Remember, there is no correct answer to any of these questions. I'm simply answering based on what my eyes tell me looks good. Yet my doctor praises me, and each time he does, I feel a little prouder about myself. I think, "All right, I'm acing this test. I can't tell you how many times I have referred my eye doctor to friends. Do I refer him because of the degrees hanging on the wall in his office? The big things? Nope. Does it matter that he has those degrees? That he knows his stuff? Absolutely. He wouldn't be my doctor without having that training and expertise. But what sets him apart from every other eye doctor I've seen is the fact that he embraces the non-medical aspect of his job, what I'm sure some in his field might consider to be a minor thing. But he gets it. He wouldn't be my doctor if he didn't. See the connection here? The best doctors have a wonderful bedside manner, and the best teachers have excellent desk-side manner. It's important to point out that the little things don't matter solely to kids. Remember Dr. Guillaume from Chapter 2, my graduate professor who made a huge impact on me by building relationships with her students? You know what else I remember her for? Putting smelly stickers on my tests. That's right. She put smelly stickers on students' exams when they did well. On the exams of adults, of graduate students. She chose to spend a few bucks at the teacher supply store to purchase smelly stickers, something typically reserved for elementary school students. The result? My classmates and I loved it. That small act of placing a fruit, popcorn, or pizza-scented sticker on our tests turned a room full of adults into giddy, school-aged children. What kind did you get? Apple? I got bubble gum. On days when exams were set to be returned, I remember quietly hoping I had done well enough to earn a sticker. Let that sink in for a moment. A grown man in his early 30s was longing for a sticker. A sticker. The little things matter, even for adults. In what ways are you leveraging the power of the little things in your classroom or school? What small actions are making learning memorable for your students? Maybe you, like so many teachers, play instrumental music in your class to provide a calm and peaceful ambiance. If so, don't underestimate the impact this is having on your students. When I taught fourth grade in the late 90s, I sometimes played a CD of Celtic music while students worked. I remember how one of my students, John, absolutely loved that CD. I remember that he particularly liked track 3, so much so that whenever that one song would come on, he would get up from his desk and stand in front of my boombox, mesmerized by the tune emanating from the speakers. I can vividly picture him standing in front of the stereo, eyes closed, arms at his side, letting the music wash over him. Background music. A little thing, yet more than 20 years later, I can clearly remember the influence it had on John. The little things matter, usually more than we realize. When things don't go as planned, when your lesson bombs, or you're feeling like you're not making a difference, don't let yourself be fooled. You're making more of an impact than you think. Remember the power contained in your simple actions, your desk-side manner. Smiling, high-fiving students as they enter campus or the classroom, complimenting them on their outfits, asking about their weekend, and then giving your undivided attention as they tell you about it. These acts can make a student feel valued, feel loved, something far more important than a perfectly executed lesson. As my PLN and former student showed, it's probably not the curriculum your students are going to remember. It's you. In a society that tells us to go big or go home, may this chapter serve as a reminder that bigger isn't always better. Belief to embrace. Sometimes the little things make the biggest impact. Questions for reflection. Think back to your favorite teachers growing up. What do you remember about them? Is it curriculum related or the little things? How is your desk side manner? What little things do you do that help your students feel valued? If you're not sure, ask them. What could you do to improve your desk side manner? What's holding you back?